More than 100,000 people have died from the coronavirus in the U.S.
That's getting closer to double the number of Americans who died during the course of the Vietnam War. How did we get here over these 4 months?
I'm Rachel Martin with David Greene, and this is Up First from NPR News. China officially has broad power to criminalize political protest in Hong Kong. A new law threatens the city's autonomy. So what does that mean for China's relations with the U.S.?
And in Minneapolis last night, demonstrations, violence, and clashes with police. This comes after George Floyd died after struggling to breathe with a police officer's knee on his neck. Mayor Jacob Frey is calling for an arrest.
Why is the man who killed George Floyd not in jail?
Stay with us. We have the news you need to start your day.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from NordVPN, a leading VPN provider. Secure your internet traffic on 6 devices at the same time. Visit nordvpn.com/upfirst and use code UPFIRST to receive 70% off and 1 month free.
More than 100,000 Americans have now died from COVID-19.
It took barely 4 months for the U.S. to reach this horrible marker. And there are still so many unanswered questions about how this country became the global epicenter of the pandemic. With less than 5% of the world's population, the U.S. has the largest number of cases and accounts for nearly a third of all known coronavirus fatalities.
And I want to bring in NPR's health correspondent, Rob Stein, who is with us. Rob, can you just put this number into perspective?
Well, you know, it's a staggering number. 100,000 is almost triple the number of people who died from the flu all year this past year, and about as many as died from opioid overdoses and suicides combined in an entire year. And the coronavirus has now killed more Americans than those who died in combat in every war since the Korean War. And many experts think 100,000 is probably an underestimate. I spoke with Thomas Inglesby about this. He runs the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. He says that tragedies like this, it's sometimes easy to forget that human beings are behind these numbers.
It's a really sad milestone for the country. I think we need to step back and just remember that that's 100,000 lives that are lost. That's 100,000 families that are grieving. And this is a important and sad day for the country.
You know, it means that the U.S. has recorded nearly 1.7 million cases now, which means the U.S. has by far the most COVID cases and about a third of all the deaths.
Well, and we should talk about how quickly this has happened, right, Rob? I mean, this is just a period of like 4 months. Talk about how we've gotten here.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly so many people have died. And many public health experts say the country, you know, might have been able to save a lot of lives if officials just recognized the magnitude of the threat sooner and acted more quickly and aggressively. The country kind of wasted a window of opportunity to keep the virus in check, you know, by failing to ramp up testing quickly enough and deploy other crucial public health weapons that have worked for other countries, like rapidly isolating sick people and quarantining anyone who had contact with them to block the virus from spreading.
Well, is there a sense that the country has some control over the spread of this virus now, or are we going to watch this death toll just climb?
So, you know, that's an important question. And sadly, this actually may just be the beginning still. Things, you know, are looking better. Cases and deaths have been dropping overall nationwide, which is a good sign. But there are still thousands of new cases and hundreds of new deaths being reported every day. And some places, things may still be getting worse.
Well, but despite that, I mean, we're seeing a lot of the country open up. So, I mean, broadly, where do you see this going?
Yeah, so the country is opening up, but the virus is still out there and most people are still vulnerable. So the fear is people, you know, are kind of fed up and, you know, might think the worst is over. Here's Richard Besser. He runs the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
It's very easy for people to get cavalier and say, you know what? I'm going to get this infection. It's not going to be much of a problem. I want to get on with my life.
And the danger in that is that, you know, terrible new outbreaks could easily erupt like wildfires, you know, flaring around the country throughout the spring and into the summer, causing many thousands more deaths, especially in places where there still isn't enough testing and not enough healthcare workers. The worst could move in from the coast to more rural parts of the country where there aren't as many hospitals and intensive care beds. And even if things do slow down over the summer, what about the fall when schools reopen and the flu and hurricane seasons hit? Things could get very bad very quickly.
All right. That is NPR health correspondent Rob Stein. Thanks, Rob.
You bet.
So China appears one step closer to having near total control over Hong Kong.
Right. Today, China's legislature approved a plan that is going to suppress secession, public protests, and basically any act that it sees as a national security threat. Ahead of the vote, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Hong Kong is no longer autonomous from China. But he also said that the U.S. stands with the people of Hong Kong.
And we have NPR's Emily Fang in Beijing. Hi, Emily.
Good morning, David.
Can you talk to us about exactly what happened today? What did China approve here?
Beijing lawmakers voted so that a smaller group of lawmakers can draft and pass the actual law. Now, if passed, this law would effectively end Hong Kong's limited autonomy. Hong Kong, as you can imagine, is once again in turmoil. There were protests over the weekend, and yesterday there were more protests over a different law, actually, a law that, if passed, would criminalize making fun of China's national anthem. More than 300 people were arrested, including some very young teenage schoolchildren.
Well, in terms of the meaning of this, I mean, obviously it could change life in Hong Kong. But when we talk about autonomy, that's an important word. And what could ending that mean for Hong Kong and its relationship with the United States?
It's a very important distinction. If Hong Kong is no longer truly autonomous, its special trade status with the U.S. could end. That status exempts Hong Kong from basically all financial restrictions, export controls, sanctions that the U.S. currently puts on mainland China. And it's what's allowed Hong Kong to be, in part, a global financial hub. Here's Assistant Secretary of State David Stilwell talking about this decision process now ongoing about whether to take away that status.
We're going to do this in a smart way, in a way that takes care of the things and the people we care about, while at the same time letting Beijing know that what they're doing is contravenes what they agreed to do back in 97.
Stilwell is talking here about the international treaty struck in 1997 between the UK and China, which was supposed to allow Hong Kong to maintain some autonomy until 2047, which has not happened.
But, I mean, trade between the United States and Hong Kong is a big deal, right? Revoking that special status could be really significant.
Yes, it could hurt Hong Kong's status as a global financial hub because it will be more difficult to do business there. The real question now is whether this is going to deter Beijing to call off its moves to control Hong Kong. And likely, it will not. Beijing has called the American bluff. China is betting that mainland cities like Shanghai and Shenzhen will overtake Hong Kong as business capitals. And certain multinationals may choose to stay in Hong Kong anyways because they prefer Beijing's order rather than the chaos of further protests.
I mean, wasn't this already quite a moment in U.S.-China relations because of the coronavirus and lots of other things?
Yes, I do not exaggerate when I say that this has been an absolutely crazy week for international relations. They might be the worst since 1989, which is when China killed its own citizens during the Tiananmen Square massacre. Yesterday, the House of Representatives passed a bill that could sanction Chinese officials over China's persecution of Muslims. Trump is expected to sign that bill into law. Two U.S. senators are proposing to ban all visas for Chinese grad students in STEM fields. And the two countries continue to go at each other about who handled the pandemic of this novel coronavirus more badly. So things are not looking up.
NPR's Emily Fang for us in Beijing. Thanks, Emily.
Thanks, David.
All right, here's some sound from video shot last night by CNN's Sarah Seidner on the streets of Minneapolis.
Police using tear gas to disperse crowds. There were fires, there was looting. All this follows the death of George Floyd, a black man who was arrested in Minneapolis. A white police officer had his knee on Floyd's neck. He was heard on video saying he couldn't breathe. The officer persisted, and Floyd died. Four officers involved were fired, and Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey is calling now for criminal charges.
Holly Bailey reports for The Washington Post, and she is in Minneapolis. Hi, Holly.
Hi.
What have the streets of Minneapolis felt like?
It's been chaotic. For most of the day yesterday, it was a peaceful protest outside Minneapolis's third police precinct, which is just a little bit south of downtown. That's where the four officers who have been fired for their involvement in the altercation with George Floyd were based. But then yesterday afternoon, it took a darker turn. Police were visible. They were on the roof of the precinct building. They were firing rubber bullets and tear gas to sort of control a crowd around that building. But in the meantime, several businesses around that area, including a Target store, an Aldi grocery store, Cub Foods grocery store, an AutoZone, they were looted. People were seen, you know, rolling carts down the street full of merchandise. There were people just, it was just complete chaos. And there seemed to be little attempt on the police's part to stop it.
Oh, interesting. Well, what is the city's plan to deal with what's happening at this point?
Essentially, the police chief, Miguel Arredondo, had said yesterday that the police has been sort of walking this tightrope between not wanting to infringe on the rights of people who feel traumatized after what has happened in the city after George Floyd's death and want to protest. But I imagine there's going to be a lot of scrutiny today and what the police response has been last night, whereas walking this line of trying to let people protest, but at the same time not protecting businesses as chaos really unfolded last night.
It sounds like, though, that we might see the National Guard come in. Where does that stand?
Well, Mayor Fry last night, as this unfolded, has said that he's asked the governor, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, to bring in the National Guard. They've asked for reinforcements from other police departments in the region to sort of help tamp down some of the chaos as they figure it's going to get worse before it gets better.
All right, talking about another night of protest on the streets of Minneapolis after the death of a black man in police custody. Holly Bailey reports for The Washington Post, and she is there. Holly, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And that is up first for Thursday, May 28th. I'm David Green.
And I'm Rachel Martin. Start your day with us here tomorrow. And since the news doesn't stop when the podcast ends, follow us on Twitter, at Up First, for your daily roundup of the most important stories of the day.
And if you want more NPR news, we've got a radio show you might like. It's NPR's Morning Edition. You can find it on your NPR station. Go to stations.npr.org. And if you want podcasts and local news and all the latest headlines, you can actually take NPR everywhere you go if you use the NPR One app. You can find it in your app store.
There's no getting around it. The coronavirus pandemic has upended everything. And daily decisions made by the White House and Congress will radically impact the human and economic toll. To keep up with the latest, join us on the NPR Politics podcast. We'll cut through the noise and let you know what decisions are being made and how they affect you.